going down, and you're invited.
Let's see it.
Bruce is hungry! Fuck the police!
Okay, we're joined here today with somebody from the Autonomous Student Network. It's a group of anarchists in the city of Austin that are students, obviously. And they are going to be talking about what all went down yesterday. Yesterday, there was rallies and marches against sanctuary cities across the U.S. Most of them very small. Some of them did turn violent, such as in San Diego. There were several arrests that happened in Austin, and our guest here is going to talk about exactly what happened. So do you want to just introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, hi. I'm a member of the Autonomous Student Network. We're an anarchist group at UT. And yeah, some of us were, you know, milling around. We're kind of involved in helping make sure that these white supremacists, this functional lynch mob that came to Austin was not unopposed.
And real quick, for those that have been paying attention, there's been an upswing, or maybe not even an upswing, but a continuation of fascist activity, both from kind of autonomous Trump supporters, militia members, but also like outright neo-Nazis and white nationalists, especially groups like Patriot Front and kind of that whole amalgamation. Do you just want to kind of set the stage a little bit? You know, what are the far-right forces in Austin and how do they work together, more or less?
Some of the biggest far-right forces we've seen over the past couple months have been the alt-right and neo-Nazi types, the American Vanguard and Patriot Front types who did the like torchlight rally at UT. They showed up on May Day to confront communist May Day rally, and they showed up again on like June 10th for the marches against Sharia law, and they're kind of one of the biggest forces we see sometimes. Maybe up to like 30 people, but kind of dispersed from across the state, and they just kind of show up occasionally. There's other groups that are more like the, you know, Confederate militia types that have a lot more organization and are very, you know, like treating it like a military treating every protest like a military operation. And the biggest one of those is like This Is Texas Freedom Force. And actually yesterday we didn't encounter either of those forces and instead kind of just ran into some of the more typical like fascist leaning Trump supporter types and some groups from like some neo-Confederates from like the Texas Confederate Militia and some other groups like that that we haven't seen around as much. And don't have as much voice or power around here, which is why they were kind of pathetic yesterday.
And November 4th is very interesting because the night before, Patriot Front had I don't even know if you'd call it a rally, but basically they staged like a photo op so they could record a video of their leader, whose name escapes me now, but the 18-year-old guy that was at Unite the Right. But I mean, it lasted, it seems like, for minutes, and then the police literally showed up and they all fucking booked it. But, the next day, from what I remember, is they showed up to the Refuse Fascism event and saw that there were no, you know, mask anti-fascists to fight, basically, and they left after like 10 minutes. But then they came back to Monkey Wrench Books, which is a long-standing anarchist bookstore in Austin, Texas, and held a rally for about 10 minutes, I believe, outside.
And yeah, when they showed up to Monkey Wrench, they just like locked the door and then they didn't do anything and people on the street were just like, hey, leave. The torchlight rally on campus was really funny because they like, you know, tried to leave and then a good half of them spent like 5 minutes trying to put their torches out and it's like burning a patch of grass next to the UT fountain.
Right.
And we just like watched this happen. This is really great. And the cops didn't do anything, of course. The cops let them finish the whole thing.
Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's funny too because it's like in all of these instances, I mean, everything that they're doing is for internet consumption. It's all about the optics of how it looks, how it's going to be placed online. It's not about how it's going to be like received by people on the street or anything like that. It's basically for the rest of the alt-right to look at it and be like, oh shit, this group has its shit together, which in reality, maybe there's a different story to be had.
And I think in Austin, that's in a way indicative of some of the successes of anti-fascism here in that they a lot of times are too afraid to have a publicly announced like rally because they know like people will come out in mass to shut them down like they did back in June 10th.
Right.
And they want to, so they have to operate in secret, which is harder to deal with, but is something of a victory, I think.
And then one last question. This Is Texas. Is that the group that organized the rally for the fake event around the Sam Houston statue? The one?
Yes, where... I think that is like the debut action, really.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they're one of the folks who like choked out Will Fears there, but that's one of the main like conflicts is really that the Oathkeepers, Deep Ascenders kind of don't like the alt-right neo-Nazi types who they kind of think are just like, you know, LARPing and aren't really serious about this. But, you know, I think if you throw them in front of a bunch of masked anti-fascists, they'll both just like buddy up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they totally did on November 4th. I mean, they were all out there together.
Yeah.
And the play seems to be right now for the alt-right is to basically mimic how the, you know, militias and the Trump supporters are dressing with American flags and kind of no over-the-top, you know, recognizable alt-right symbols.
Yeah, exactly.
So just take us through it. So what all happened yesterday?
Once we got there, there was a group of like maybe 30 to 40 anti-fascists, a good number of them masked with shields and flags for defense. And a good, like, 5 to 10, like, other, just, like, regular folks around. So the park is, like, this big, is a square, and it's kind of a big gully, and in the center is a gazebo. And there was just this one dude standing on the gazebo with an American flag and, like, live streaming. So there's just a hilarious sight of a bunch of anti-fascists just chanting at this one dude who couldn't do anything. And stood around for a while, and then some other folks showed up for the fascist rally, with American flags and Confederate flags and Texas flags. But even at the like biggest, they were maybe they were still outnumbered at least like by 10 to 20 people, and you know some of them came prepared with like their own shield with Confederate flags on them and stuff. But for the most part, they ended up just being behind this big line of bike cops that set up in the middle of the park so that you know they wouldn't try to come over and you know basically get their asses kicked if they tried to fuck with anyone. And then, so there was just like a good hour maybe of just standing in the park and chanting at them and really drowning them out because they, you know, they could not chant. They don't have any good chants or any rhythm really. And there was that there was one point where we just pointed that out and they kind of went, well, you only chant because you don't have fat.
What?
yeah. Oh my God. How do you think, I guess? You know, at some point, InfoWars showed up and there's, you know, I think...
InfoWars is based in Austin.
They're always right. At our shit.
Right.
And so, you know, just had a couple of the folks from the rally kind of went over and blocked their cameras, didn't really speak to them, and just, like, prevented them from coming into the anti-fascist side of the march. And I think that the video they posted kind of shows then a good example of how to handle groups like InfoWars, which is to not give them content because they're looking for that soundbite. They want, you know, Antifa to say something that they can clip out and be like, look, they're being violent. But if you just stand there, block their cameras and don't do anything, especially if you're like masked and, you know, can protect your identity, it's for the best. Because we've also seen, especially even in Austin, there was, you know, a little girl who was like, you know, y'all are losers and like told them to fuck off. And then InfoWars followers doxed her and like harassed her family.
This was this is like the story that was on like rawstory.com, which is like a popular kind of liberal website. But she walked up to InfoWars and said, yeah, you're all losers. And it went viral. Everybody loved it. So you're saying that they doxed, I mean, she must have been, what, like 8 years old?
Yeah, they have no shame. They will dox an 8 year old.
did her family like receive threats and harassment?
From what we know, it seems like they received threats and harassment. I think the girl had a Twitter and it like went down and she said that she was like scared. And I'm not sure what really happened after that, if folks have really followed up with them, but that's kind of the state we're at with InfoWars and why, you know, we're pretty hardline about we don't want them anywhere near us.
Right. Did InfoWars react to somebody blocking? I'm assuming they just like stood with their sweatshirt in front of the video camera. I mean, did they try?
It was really funny because they were like, you know, you're being childish. Why won't you let me in? Why won't you talk to me like an adult? And then one of the DPS cops was like, sir, can you just like come over here and move away and make my job easier? And this dude was just like insisting, no, I have a right to free speech and I'm going to try to talk to these people. And then like just tried to walk into the marsh. And so just walked into these people's shields, just like, oh, look, they're blocking me. Like, oh, no, they won't let me in. And then just like tried to kind of go around the park. And then just sprinted into the fascist side of the valley. And then all the anti-fascists were just like, fine, bye.
Which is great sometimes because usually it's like, yeah, go to their side so you can film everybody and get everything that they're saying. Okay, so what happened next?
So then the bike cops started moving and started – so their plan was to march to the Capitol, and so the anti-fascists were all on the north side of the park to kind of block the easy route that would take them up Guadalupe towards the Capitol. And so the cops started blocking off part of the street to kind of take them a little bit around to get there. And so the entire group crowds just started moving to cut them off. And so there was a bunch of tense moments of just like confrontation and moving around to cut off both the bike cops and the fascists. And for a good while, maybe like an hour at least, it was just going through the streets of downtown Austin, running around corners to keep cutting off this march. And occasionally folks would come up and there wouldn't be any bike cops yet, and it would just end up being a bunch of anti-fascists like blocking the street for the fascists, and then like confrontations where they would like, you know, try to push through, and the anti-fascists kind of held their ground until the cops would just like have to come and break it up and just, you know, form their perimeter around the fascists and then try to get them to march to the street. But the entire way they were just being shouted down, they were being heckled. There was no point where the fascists got to like have their own rally or give their own speech. It was entirely being reactive to the people following them and outnumbering them. There was the cops were obviously the biggest, like the most numerous people at this action, basically, at this point. And at some point, as the group is approaching the Capitol, you know, some of these fascists try to snatch people's masks, snatch people's flags, shit that they always love to do. And obviously the cops aren't doing shit to them, but then people started kind of getting pushed down by the bike cops, forcing the bikes into them to try and speed up the rally. And that's when the cops started snatching people. They just tackled them on the ground and pushed them over with their bikes. And as people tried to pick them back up, they would grab them too. We had a couple comrades who just like kind of got lifted and kind of like thrown to the side by some of the cops. And then there was just like this big moment of the group kind of getting dispersed as the arrested folks started to get taken away. And then we had to regroup as the fascists continued to march. And obviously when the cop kind of broke their line to, you know, arrest some of the anti-fascists, the fascists took that as a chance to, you know, come out and try to snatch some stuff or hit some people. There's reports that some of the folks who were being arrested got kicked by one of the fascists while they were down. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously the cops didn't do shit because cops and Klan go fucking hand in hand.
How many people were arrested altogether?
4 people from the anti-fascist side. It looked like one fascist was at least detained for drawing his gun while this was happening. Doesn't seem like, from what we know, that they've been charged with anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, part of another thing I forgot to mention is that there were also armed anti-fascists there as well, partially because of the threat of a fascist drawing the gun and trying to shoot at the march.
Right. And for those that have never been in a demonstration where, you know, it is legal to carry firearms on both sides, can you just explain how that works out with the police? Because I think most people would assume you're at a protest, people are being arrested, everybody has guns. Like, how does that work? Like, do the police freak out? Do they not care? What happens?
Yeah, I always forget that, you know, other states don't have this open carry shit. Like, I forget Berkeley would be so much different if it was open carry on both sides. But that's what Austin is like. And so you can have protests where both sides are heavily armed, and it's, you know, there's always a risk someone points the gun at the wrong person and it goes to shit. And in a way, it keeps the cops kind of in line, especially with the anti-fascists, because they know, like, if anyone pulls something, it could turn into a bloodbath real quick. And, you know, usually when it's well organized, the armed folks, at least on the left, kind of stay separate from all of the kind of the rest of the crowd. Mm-hmm. Like, while the crowd was following after the fascist rally, the armed unit kind of stayed in the back. And so to, you know, like, hopefully not just draw fire attention onto that crowd and also be a kind of deterrent, but outside of the regular protest. And yeah, it can be, it's kind of tense when, you know, you see a bunch of like militia folks show up all armed and ready to go. But also in those moments, knowing that like they have armed, at least somewhat reassuring to see, armed protesters there ready to, you know, defend you in case something goes down.
Right. So after the arrest, was that pretty much the end of the event?
No, they kept going. So we got into the Capitol, and then it was really funny because we just kind of sprinted ahead of them and took the steps of the Capitol, and then so it kind of just became all the anti-fascists on the steps of the Capitol chanting, and then the little fascist rally surrounded by cops off to the side just like saying stuff back at us.
But how many people did they have?
It was maybe like 20 to 30.
Okay.
And yeah, 30 at the most, and our crew had like 40, 50, 60. And yeah, so like it was this really nice kind of spectacular moment of the rally kind of just became the anti-fascist rally with them being kind of the counter protesters who were shitty at it. they started like doing shit. It's also really great to just like being able to have the chance to just like shut down whatever they were saying. At some point they started just like chanting USA, and then we just like started chanting back sucks.
You know, before we talk about the Monkey Wrench books thing, I want to ask you, a lot of people have thought about the relationship between the police and the far right at these rallies and tried to kind of like tease out exactly what's happening. I mean, obviously we know what's happening. They're giving special protection to one side and repressing more another side. But in your analysis, do you feel like there are personal relationships that are between, especially like the militias, who a lot of them are ex-law enforcement, ex-military, and local police departments? Like, do you think there's any sort of coordination that happens before these events? Are there personal relationships which allow them to kind of trade information? Or is it just kind of in the spur of the moment how these things break down and just based on people's own personal, you know, political goals to repress one side and basically allow another to continue? Or what do you think it is?
I think there's definitely an aspect of kind of personal relationships. I'm not sure if there's what the connections are between a lot of the law enforcement and the more, you know, hardline neo-Nazi clan types around, but there's definitely, as you said, kind of the connection with ex-law enforcement folks in the militias. There's also, you know, folks like the people who organized the March for Trump, and all these kinds of rallies, even the one yesterday, are, you know, very friendly with the police. They try to make good connections with them. They're all the kind of Blue Lives Matter, Black, Back the Blue kind of folks. So I think they all had a kind of a working relationship where they know the police. They talk to them. They ask them for protection. And I mean, like, we can even see, you know, this was a tiny ass rally. It wasn't really coordinated or organized. And there was no way they got, you know, the money or the permit for an actual street march. But the cops went out of their ways and over and above to, you know, protect this march and enable it to happen. Especially, you know, it was interesting because this was kind of the first, I think, action where, or an anti-fascist action in Austin where it kind of became this chase and kind of following the fascist march, because on June 10th, they were just, were pinned against the fence and were completely prevented from marching. And then the last one before that was like the November 9th rally where they were in the Capitol and there was just like, you know, 10 of them outnumbered by hundreds.
What do you feel the impact of Trump's kind of just continuing, you know, unpopularity is? Is that having an effect? I mean, obviously the tax bill was just passed, and the kind of the layer within Trump support that was like, well, maybe he'll repeal NAFTA or maybe he'll bring jobs back, you know. And then like the tax bill comes out, and obviously it's an attack on poor and working class Americans. Paul Ryan is saying now that they're going to go after quote entitlements, meaning they're going to start going after Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and all that stuff. So are you seeing like a change in who's coming out? Like, is it just the hardcore ideological deplorables that will support Trump no matter what because he's like a cultural warrior, or is it the same in Austin?
I think it's kind of mostly stayed the same, but I think that's mostly because the people who, at least around here, have been coming out are, you know, definitively not working class. They have very well funded. They're very well funded. They're very middle upper class. They can get, you know, they can get good shields that aren't just like made out of trash cans and shit, whereas the anti-fascists who are working class have, like, DIY that shit.
Right.
And so, you know, and I think in a lot of ways they don't really care about all that stuff, because especially get like the types of people who come out to these are motivated by this kind of more of a white supremacist national racial identification and this kind of, you know, Southern heritage, Confederate history, right, anti-immigrant sentiment, rather than some kind of sense of Trump being a solution to the crisis of neoliberalism. Mm-hmm. And I think this kind of, you know, there's been conversations happening just like in kind of leftist circles and spaces and social media about this kind of idea or myth of like the white working class as why Trump got elected. But I think what we see in Austin is very definitively a bourgeois, like white supremacist movement that is motivated by racial animus, not, you know, some misplaced like class or miss, you know, a failure of class consciousness.
Right, right. Like, we would have voted for Bernie, but, you know. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing. That's a great analysis and insight. So what happened later in the day at Monkey Wrench?
Yeah, so after we all kind of dispersed, some of the anarchist, anti-fascists, especially some from our crew, decided that we would swing by Monkey Wrench Books and just kind of hang out in case they needed any support. It was interesting, and we were kind of curious because we didn't see Patriot Front at the action yesterday, and so we were curious if they were even in town, or and also partially worried that they might just like be doing something somewhere else. But we've had no word that Patriot Front was anywhere yesterday. They never showed up to Monkey Wrench. So yeah, at Monkey Wrench there was other folks who were there kind of earlier throughout the day and weren't at the counter protest, who were just hanging out. Helping defend the space. There was, you know, apparently a block party happening at one of the stores kind of next door. The bookstore had kind of let everyone on the block know that, hey, this we're dealing with this kind of problem. Just, like, keep an eye out. And a lot of folks came out to support. It was, you know, got to meet up with a lot of good comrades and friends there. There was a nice little talk on social media for activists held by Kit later in the day. Yeah, it was a nice kind of decompression from the events early that day for us, at least.
Right. That's awesome. That's awesome that you were all able to come together. I think that's the thing, too, is that sometimes these things feel like, you know, like, oh, we have to think more about security and we have to do this. But really, there is an excuse for us to get better organized and also to have a conversation with other people around us.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to, like, you know, defend spaces like that because one of the things, you know, I think we often militants in the U.S. look to, you know, European militants as a source of inspiration. But a thing we forget is that they're, in Europe, the autonomous spaces are very central to a lot of those militant actions and movements. And that we need to, that we, in a lot of ways, have a lack of those here. That we need to build better connections and organizing with and through those spaces in order to, you know, have a sustainable movement. Especially because, like, you know, we keep having these confrontations with fascists in downtown Austin, but, you know, downtown Austin isn't, you know, some place that we real leftists should really want to claim because it's not really, there's nothing there for us. It's right. Kind of a desert. It's
right.
Really, shutting down a fascist rally there is more like a strike in the heart of enemy territory, not a defense of our own spaces. Our spaces should be those, the spaces that we create, autonomous spaces. They should be, you know, working class communities and student communities, and grounding our work in that, I think, is important so that we also, and, you know, to realize that anti-fascism is more than just this spectacle of the protesters, shutting down these other protesters, right. That it's also the community work and building, you know, connections with other movements, like the struggle against deportations in Austin and the struggle against gentrification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point. And most of their stuff, especially the explicit neo-Nazi, fascist, white nationalist stuff, is all spectacular. It's all about, you know, trying to appear that you're like in front of the hall of power and you're about to get in. But one last question for you before we sign off. I was just curious. I mean, you all are a student group, groups like Identity Europa, groups like Patriot Front, currently across the country right now are engaging in a low-level intensity campaign of blanketing campuses with flyers, dropping banners. Like Identity Europa under their new leadership just did a huge with like 8 people though for like, you know, for a photo op, a big banner drop said end immigration. Obviously Patriot Front has been doing the same thing at different campuses, dropping banners, putting up flyers and posters, and in many ways mimicking a lot of the things that anarchists have done over the years. But I'm just curious for you all on a campus and in the community as well, what advice do you have for people listening to this that are either students currently or people that are around campuses where they're starting to see this stuff pop up? How should people respond?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the first things is to, you know, raise hell about it, to make sure that people know that it's happening. And, you know, doing so in a way that doesn't spread their propaganda, but, you know, let people know, hey, we found these, like, flyers calling for genocide on our campus. And directing the anger and, you know, being like, the administration isn't saying shit about this, direct your anger at them. The cops aren't doing shit about this, direct your anger at them. And direct your anger into, you know, supporting anti-fascism. I think there's, you know, importance in being, once you hear about these things, just being ready to go out and take them down instantly and have your own kind of propaganda to put up. Some of the best things, I think, are also, you know, finding ways to play with and parody or detour in some of the fascist propaganda. Something we did, I think the second time Identity Europa ever flyed on our campus, was we took all the flyers, we had a little bonfire and burned them, and then we put the burnt remnants of the flyers back up where we found them and posted pictures of them online.
That's awesome.
You know, It's Going Down has the great, like, smash Identity Europa flyers with the broken-ass Greek and Roman statues.
Right.
Beyond that, I think there's, you know, you doesn't need to build up anti-fascist sentiments among students and make students aware that this is a problem, and be very explicit in connecting it to this idea that, you know, the police won't solve it and that we shouldn't rely on the police, but we have to get organized ourselves to counter it. And that organization, I think, can take a lot of forms. I think essential basic work is just like information networks, getting people who can connect with other militants or find ways to get info on when fascists might be mobilizing or when stuff goes up, and be able to be out there and take it down instantly, or even confront them on campus. We actually, from back in April when they wanted to do a big flyering run on all college campuses, we went out there and actually confronted three of them and chased them off our campus with the help of some other comrades from the Revolutionary Student Front. So information is essential. Getting support networks is essential. Doing shit, and, you know, finding other small ways that you can build support and do something, even if it's not, you know, being able to always be available and, you know, tear down their flyers instantly. So right. Something we have is a text alert system where we use it for if there's racists on campus or if we found racist flyers and other stuff, like if there's cops harassing someone or, you know, or if there's just like frat bros harassing people in West Campus. Sending out alerts and getting people to, you know, rely on militant organizations for, you know, the information about what's going on with fascists and helping people keep people safe that way. Student patrols are another, like, kind of option to help counter that threat.
Right.
And the biggest thing they think to counter is just, like, student apathy about what's going on, or, you know, this kind of sense that that anti-fascism and this whole conflict with the fascists is a thing that, you know, is something that other people do and that they can, like, care about but not be involved in, and finding ways to get everyone involved in that, whether it's information, whether it's propagandizing, whether it's just being, a community of support.
Right. Well, everybody can tear down a sticker or a flyer, and also everybody mm-hmm. can tell their friend, like, hey, I see the guy putting up the sticker or the flyer.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think it's interesting. I mean, there was an article that came out a couple days ago about how the Southern Poverty Law Center did a presentation at UC Berkeley, and their whole thing was around their concept of how you should respond to the alt-right on campus, which is through nonviolent demonstrations, always away mm-hmm. from the source of, you know, the person giving the talk, working with the administration, working with the police. 9 people showed up. they bought pizza for 200 people. 9 people showed up. You know, a couple of weeks before, Mark Bray, on his speaking tour, came and spoke multiple times in the Bay Area and in Berkeley, and, you know, hundreds of people came out. So it just shows you that these community direct action responses, while at times they are confrontational, are becoming more popular because this is what gets results, not going to the authorities, which are doing nothing and often actively working with these people.
I mean, yeah, even in our local context, we've seen students get the most mobilized and willing to, you know, get involved in something after in February when American Vanguard flyered on campus and there was this massive outcry about these anti-Muslim flyers that the university described as politically divisive speech and just like their lackluster response and the presence of militant, you know, organizers at the administration-held town hall that disrupted it and said, and, you know, called it out and said, this is bullshit, really energized a lot of students and got them out to a separate town hall held by a lot of these organizers. Right. And some of that energy kind of channeled back into a lot of these different organizations that are doing this work. And, you know, we saw some of our greatest increase in interest and numbers after both the Charlotte's, you know, the Charlottesville protests, and people kind of seeing what fascists did there, and on campus after the November 4th rally and people, you know, realizing, holy shit, there were literal Nazis on campus with torches.
Right.
And we didn't know about it, except, you know, if you were listening to the anarchists and the communists.
And that's where I think their whole concept of, quote, triggering the libs really is just like so off base. And it just shows how far removed from reality it is, because it's like if your whole movement is based on angering people, then you're giving other groups of people an opportunity to organize with them. And I think that's what they've really done. And they still think that like that is a strategy that's going to ultimately, you know, get them power or recruits. And it's not. It's actually slowly driving them down into, you know, farther into the margins, while anti-fascist anarchists are becoming, and what I'm seeing, more organized and having more of a social capital.
Yeah, exactly. And I think another thing we've seen is kind of this move towards, you know, trying to be more reasonable towards the normies and the liberals. The, you know, Patriot Front's move towards adopting the American flag and trying to be more, you know, traditional American nationalist, the founding fathers, all that shit. And even with the, like, whole 4chan organized, it's okay to be white, like, firing stuff. That's, you know, this kind of hope that you can, that they can normalize white nationalist ideologies with a kind of tame or passive face. And we see, you know, a lot of the traditional right figures, like folks on Fox News and right-wing comedians, kind of doing this. We you know, BuzzFeed released all this stuff about Breitbart's connections to the alt-right and actively facilitating its growth. And so I think that's something that I think we'll see an evolution of in terms of fascist organizing and technique, that we'll see more of those kinds of fascists start showing up. And that I think one thing the left needs to be ready for is to combat those and make explicit that even if, you know, they're not wearing swastikas and not they're not Sieg Heiling and saying the same shit, that they are the same shit, that it is still white nationalism and white supremacy, just with a nicer face, and that it still has to be opposed as militantly.
Well, in closing, how can people follow the work of ASN and keep up with y'all?
So to follow our work, you can follow our Facebook page. It's the Autonomous Student Network, UT Austin. You can follow our Twitter, at ASN Austin. I think that's the only social media we're on. We have a WordPress at sassatx.wordpress.com. We also have a Autonomous Student Media website where we're trying to create a new independent platform for student expression and leftist expression at autonomedia.blackblogs.org. So check any of those out and feel free to get in contact with us, show up to meetings next semester, and, you know, you can hit us up if you want to be on our listserv and get more updates on what we're up to.
Awesome. Hey, thanks so much for coming on and sharing all these excellent insights. It's been great.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Man, I'm so fucking sick. People coming up to me, coming to meetings at my shows, talking this fucking bullshit about chemtrails, and fucking 30 years later, you're still talking 9/11, man. Fuck that, man. Get a fucking life, man. Man, I got your fucking building number 7 right here, motherfucker. Come and get it. Let's do this. You always talk about bringing back the spirit of 76, but slavery and genocide was the spirit of 76. Glenn Beck meets William Cooper, who needs this shit? Show us light, burning crosses for aborted fetuses. I watch you crying YouTube, you should exercise more, cause the shrink of call that paranoid delusions of grandeur. So why you against the pharmaceutical industry? There's something fucked up in your brain chemistry. If I was the FBI, I'd invent Alex Jones. Take 2 spoonfuls of silver iodine, call me when the DVDs are firm. Don't call it a conspiracy, it's the way it's always been, but you read Confederate history. three. Some concepts are too big, this world is too small. I'm a grown ass man, fuck you and your chemtrails. Don't fucking talk to me about the fluoride in the water. Talk to me about how we can smash the state, fight the power. Y'all give truth a bad name, lying motherfucker. You give Texas a bad name. We got real enemies to face, wars we can actually win. They're doing real shit to destroy us in the open. Now you're gonna say I'm a new world order stooge. I'm a old world order stooge, like Red Cloud and Peter Gell to lose. As an anarchist, I was born to lose and get stabbed in the back by collaborators like you. So you wanna talk about what happened on 9/11? Obviously, was a multi-dimensional shape-shifting alien. He looked like Reagan, rose from the ashes like white devils in hell, denying evolution. Now I would never call the cops, but to the EPA I'll snitch you out. So much hot air, you're fucking on my carbon count. Chill while I pour a little Pepsi out for the aborted babies that ain't bought Lou Gusset denim yet. You're like the conspiracy theory SkyMall, the David Icke reptile, swallowing its own tail. You should fall on your megaphone, die with some dignity. How many dinosaurs had to die to pay for your YouTube traffic, B? You claim to love freedom so much, you a police lover. Why you hate women so much? Talk about the feminist homosexual plot for domination. As if the answer to the world's problems is more Christians breeding. You ain't a libertarian, you're Rand Paul with a tinfoil hat. I'm a libertarian socialist, Google that. You scam the news and twist facts, place it on faith in free market where most of the world can't afford bootstraps. Freedom come from the barrel of a gun, not from the shit end of a white man's megaphone. You wanna reduce the state to the size of a police station? Okay, but let's go all the way and close every police station. Alex, you ignore Alec, who writes terrorism laws, talking Bilderberg. Not a word on the Koch brothers. You're still in half the world down the river, B. Or the wild funnel and the rage to feed the trough for the GOP. Quit talking shit on the Masons. My grandfather's a Mason, and he hates the government. All them Shriners wanna do is build hospitals. That's a market-based solution to misguided capital. Fuck Alex Jones.